Hello everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if like us you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host Josh.
And I'm your other host Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me.
As always, thank you for all the support so far on our podcast.
Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. Share with your friends and write us a review.
But only if it's a good one.
We hope you all had a wonderful summer break and didn't miss us too much. But don't worry, we're back with season 3 and ready to talk some more true crime.
Right everyone, let's get on with this week's episode, and this is the strange case of Corrie McKeague. In every missing person case, there's a moment. A last sighting, a final conversation, the last piece of a trail before it stopped cold. Sometimes that last moment makes sense. A walk toward home, a cab ride, a goodbye at the door. And sometimes that last moment is impossible to reconcile. A man steps into an alley, a dead end, watched by cameras from every angle. The alley is quiet, empty. He doesn't come out. The cameras never lose sight of the exits. And yet, the man is gone. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. To understand why this case captured the nation's attention, you have to know who Corrie was. Corrie McKeague was born in 1993 in Scotland, in the historic town of Dunfermline, in the Kingdom of Fife. His mother, Nicola Urquhart, was a police officer, the kind of woman who believed in order, discipline and service. Corrie was the middle child of three boys, and from the start, he stood out for his charm and restless energy. He was cheeky, funny, confident. The kind of young man who could turn strangers into friends in the space of a few minutes. He loved motorbikes, nights out, and the kind of adrenaline-charged adventures that made his mother shake her head but secretly smile. By his early 20s, Corrie had channeled that energy into the military, joining the Royal Air Force as a gunner. He was posted to RAF Honington, a base in Suffolk, England. Military life suited him in some ways, the camaraderie, the structure, but Corrie was no recluse. On weekends, he headed out to nearby towns to unwind. His social circle extended well beyond the base. Friends and family say that while Corrie was independent, he wasn't the type to vanish without explanation. He kept in touch. He made plans. His life was moving forward. Which is why what happened in September 2016 didn't just seem strange. It seemed impossible.
I mean, I only know of this case what you've told me, because I know you've been massively intrigued by this for a long, long time.
Well, it was all over the news at the time because it was so strange. And, you know, in England, I'm not saying strange things don't happen, but it was just a big mystery, you know, as to where he'd gone to.
Well, I think even just from like the little synopsis before you started the episode, even that's baffled me about the cameras being on every exit and stuff. And then he just was never seen again.
That's what I was just going to say. CCTV plays such a big part in missing people now. You know, they're a big help, aren't they, in tracking their movements. And literally, they caught him going into this dead-end road and he just never came out.
And this is only in 2016 as well. So it's not even that long ago. Like, CCTV would have been pretty advanced in 2016.
Less than a decade, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
it's Friday evening, September the 23rd, 2016. Corrie has the weekend off. He decides to go to Bury St Edmunds, a historic market town about 10 miles from his base, known for its medieval architecture, cobbled streets and lively nightlife. Around 10 p.m, he drives into town in his car, a black BMW, and parks in his usual spot, the free parking area near the arcades. It's something he's done before. Corrie often leaves his car overnight, intending to pick it up the next day after resting after a night out. Over the next few hours, Corrie makes his way through several pubs and bars. CCTV later shows him at the Grapes pub, laughing and drinking with friends. Later, he's at Flex Nightclub, a small but busy club popular with the younger crowd. He's wearing a pale pink Ralph Lauren polo shirt, slim jeans and brown suede boots. His hair is neatly styled. He's been drinking steadily throughout the night, but he's still on his feet, still engaging with people. At 1:20 a.m, Corrie leaves the club alone. He buys a burger from a takeaway, leans casually against a wall, eating as he chats to strangers. The cameras catch him smiling, gesturing animatedly. For the next couple of hours, Corrie wanders the town centre. At around 3 a.m, he starts moving towards a less busy area, the service road behind a row of businesses known locally as the Horseshoe.
So we know that at 1:20 he stopped and got a burger, some food at a takeaway. But then it says around 3 a.m. he started moving towards the less busy area, so it took him an hour and 40 minutes to eat a burger.
Yeah, you do see him on the CCTV walking around, and I think at one point, if I'm right, he stumbles. So he was quite drunk, you know.
I was going to say, that sounds just like drunken wandering, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, I mean, I know the cameras picked him up, but I don't know whether he spoke to anybody or anything. I think he was just ambling around.
Well, you're not walking around the city centre at 1:20 in the morning if you're sober, really, are you? What purpose would you have for doing that?
I mean, I'm not saying there's any reason why he was doing that, but why would you do that as a drunken young man?
I mean, from experience, if I've been out on a night out and it's 1:30 in the morning, I'm getting a burger, I'm going to eat the burger, I'm probably going to get in a taxi and go home.
That's what I was thinking.
Like, maybe if I fancied a little wander, it'd be 10, 15, 20 minutes max, but an hour and 40 minutes to eat a burger and wander around seems like quite a substantial amount of time.
Makes me wonder if he wasn't, like, meeting someone or waiting to meet up with someone. And if he was popping in and out of different bars, that would be different, but he's literally just wandering the streets. And he ends up... We're in the area of this Horseshoe. They call it the Horseshoe, which obviously the Horseshoe is some kind of sort of like crescent-shaped area, isn't it? Where I think is where he enters and doesn't come out of.
But it also said it's a less busy area, so it sounds to me like he's walking away from the city centre. But why would he wander that far? Do you know what I mean?
I wonder if he wasn't trying to get a cab, or was he trying to walk home if it was not where his car was parked? Obviously, he couldn't drive, but... He could have actually gone to his car and sat in his car, couldn't he, if he couldn't get home?
Well, I mean, this is just all pure speculation, isn't it? I mean, sometimes it's hard to get a taxi on a night out if it's busy, so he could have been walking to get a taxi.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe he just kept walking further and further, and that explains why he kept walking, you know? The Horseshoe is not a place most people linger at night. It's a curved loading area for delivery trucks and refuse collection, tucked away behind shops. It's walled off on three sides and open only at one end. It's lit by harsh, pale street lamps and monitored by multiple CCTV cameras. So we were right, really, weren't we? This Horseshoe is the dead end that he went into. But that's strange in itself because it's not a residential area or anything, is it? It's the back of shops, basically, where they load up, I'm guessing. And put their rubbish.
So you'd really have no reason to be wandering behind there.
I wonder why he went into there. At 3:25 a.m, Corrie walks into the Horseshoe. He's looking at his phone. His gaze is loose, relaxed, maybe a little unsteady. He walks deeper into the curve of the service road, disappearing from the wide shot of the CCTV. This is the last confirmed sighting of him alive. What makes this case so disturbing is what the cameras show next. In the hours that follow, the only vehicles that enter the Horseshoe are service trucks. The only people caught leaving are workers on their normal shifts. No one matching Corrie's description ever walks back out.
That is so bizarre.
I know.
Especially if there's only one way in and one way out. I mean, he has to be in there, doesn't he?
So them CCTV cameras are picking up all the activity, the normal activity of the day. I'm guessing by now the day's starting, you know, it's early hours of the morning, probably early 6 o'clock or something. And people are going in and out just as normal, unloading stuff and everything. But they've never caught, you know, on camera him coming back out.
That is really bizarre. Do you know what? It really reminds me of Brian Schaefer.
The Ugly Tuna Saluna.
Yeah, it really reminds me of Brian Schaefer because it's a very similar thing, isn't it? There was another exit that he could have got out there, but there was no evidence of him ever leaving that club, and it seems like it's the same thing here. But this is a bit more bizarre, to be honest, because there is only one way in and one way out.
Yeah, the only other way would be going in through the back of one of the shops and going into the shops, you know, and hiding out in there or something.
But again, surely they would have had CCTV showing him going into the back of the shops, because I'm assuming that shops would have had cameras pointed at their back doors and stuff to prevent people trying to break in.
Yeah, there's no CCTV footage of him after he walks in though, so where did he go then? They don't know what happened to him, really. You know, there's nowhere for him to go. So, by chance...
But maybe it's on purpose. He's managed to find a blind spot in all of the cameras where he can't be seen.
Yeah. I think sometimes those cameras, you know, they sweep across backwards and forwards. And maybe they've missed him. And I think possibly that might have been a theory at first, that maybe he's kind of dodged the cameras. But it seemed unlikely, you know, because probably the way they moved, they would have picked him up at some point.
Well, also unlikely at 3:25 in the morning when you've been drinking since 10 o'clock. I think it said he went out. that you would have the, you know, the mental capacity to dodge cameras.
I don't mean he was doing it on purpose.
No, I know. Maybe it's just by sheer luck.
Exactly. Things like this do happen, but notice it says he was unsteady on his feet, so he was quite drunk, really. When Corey doesn't show up at RAF Honington later that day, it doesn't immediately cause panic. Maybe he stayed with friends in town. Maybe he slept late. But by Sunday, he still hasn't answered calls or messages from his family. And by Monday, it's clear something's wrong. His mother, Nicola, contacts Suffolk Police. And because she's a police officer herself, she knows how to get things moving. She pushes for immediate searches. She knows the critical hours are slipping away. Police begin retracing Corrie's last known movements throughout Bury St Edmunds using the town's extensive CCTV network. Every bar, every street, every alley is checked. It all leads back to the horseshoe.
That name seems quite eerie, doesn't it? It all
the
leads
horseshoe.
Back to the horseshoe.
Yeah.
But really, it's just like the back of some shops.
Yeah.
When you've just showed me the picture of it online, it's not what I was picturing in my mind at all. I think the name horseshoe is a little bit misleading, to be honest. Because in my mind, it was describing a road, like a service road behind some shops that's shaped like a horseshoe, but it's not. The actual
with
shops themselves.
An exit.
The actual shops themselves are in the shape of a horseshoe, and it's kind of the gap in the middle of the horseshoe where he's gone, where the bins
where
are.
Where lorries unload and stuff like
exactly.
that. But it makes me wonder why he wandered in there, and I think maybe he needed a wee or something. And, you know, it's like a more private spot, isn't it? You know,
I would say, as a male, if you've been drinking since 10 o'clock, those waterworks are well and truly open. And I know from my experience, every beer I have or something, I'm going to need a wee straight after. Once you start, you can't stop.
He's been wandering around for quite a long time, so maybe he's past it and it's, you know, you look in and think,
looks
oh,
quite
I'll
private.
Go in there, because you don't want to be doing it on the road, do you? So that's my theory, that he's gone in there for a wee.
There had to be a reason why he's gone in there. I can't see any reason why he would just stroll in thinking, oh, this looks cool. Because it's not really anything, is it? It's just behind some shops.
The only other thing is if he wanted to go to sleep or something, but I don't know why he wouldn't have gone back to his car.
But yeah, well, I would think maybe if, I don't know, maybe if friends and family have said, oh yeah, he's known for like just sleeping rough or something when he's been drinking too much or whatever, but it doesn't seem like he's that type of person.
No, I think he's probably not thinking clearly because he's drunk, but it just seems to me like if he's wandering home trying to get home, which is what I think he was doing, he's just seen it and gone in. I don't think it's been a planned thing. He's just seen it and gone in. And the only reason I can think of for him to go in would be to have a wee, really. So
yeah, I think that's quite a valid theory, to be really honest.
In reviewing the footage, investigators note that a bin lorry, a garbage truck, entered the horseshoe at 4:19 a.m, less than an hour after Corrie walked in. The driver made a standard collection from a large commercial bin. Initially, this lead seems weak. The truck's collection records state that the bin weighed just 11 kilograms, a fraction of what it would take to hide a person. But months later, a revelation changes everything. The weight record was wrong. That bin actually contained over 100 kilograms of waste, far more than normal. Police now theorise that Corrie, possibly drunk and tired, may have climbed into the bin to sleep. When the lorry arrived, he could have been trapped inside, crushed and transported to a landfill site.
I mean,
what do you think
a
of that?
90 kilogram discrepancy is a pretty big bloody discrepancy, don't you think? A pretty big mistake to make.
Yeah, from what I can remember, that it was a fair time afterwards as well. And at this point, then they started searching, you know, refuse dumps, you know. And by that time, tons and tons of rubbish had been put on top, and they had to try and locate the area that had dropped off at. So they did manage to do that, because apparently they do it in like sections, don't they? But it took some digging, I think.
But. I'm still on the mistake that was made. How do you note that it was 11 kilograms when in actual fact it was 100 kilograms? That's a massive difference because, well, for example, I weigh 82 kilograms right now. So 100 kilograms is more than enough to be the weight of a human plus some rubbish.
I think the fact that it weighed 11 kilograms is weird because that they even thought that. Because
yeah, it's not that heavy.
Yeah, if it's collecting refuse and they do it on a regular basis, wouldn't you think that was weird, that there was no rubbish to collect? Maybe they actually missed, it was like 101 kilograms and they missed out a number, do you know what I mean? But somebody should
have... Pretty important mistake to make though when it comes to something like this, isn't it?
Well, you'd look at the records more closely then, wouldn't you? In this situation?
Well, I mean, it says there when the lorry arrived, he could have been trapped inside, crushed and transferred. Because obviously when you put the rubbish in the lorry, it crushes it up to make room, doesn't it? So in some way, I don't think he was ever going to be found anyway. They might have found... They're not going to find an intact, alive body, are they? If he's been crushed through a bin lorry.
Is that something people would do? Climb into a bin to go to sleep?
I mean, who knows what people would do when they've had too much to drink? And honestly, I think this theory does carry a lot of weight because I think it is the
only... Was that a joke then? Carry a lot of weight?
Yeah, sorry. No, it wasn't actually. No pun intended. But I think it's the only theory in my mind that actually makes sense. It's the only explanation for how he got out of there undetected.
Well, it's logical, isn't it? You see him going in, he doesn't come out. What does go in is a bin lorry that's heavier than usual, and that comes out, and he's nowhere to be found.
And what I meant before by him being crushed and stuff is I don't think it really plays that much of a big role that it was done later on, because I think either way, the only difference is if they would have done it immediately, they probably would have found body parts and kind of said, okay, this is what happened.
But also think of his family as well, because they never did that. There was months and months of searching.
That's the horrible part.
And probably cost a lot of money as well. You know, they've done that, haven't they?
Well, also, they probably thought of this bin theory straight away, and they've said, well, it can't be that because it only weighed 11 kilograms. So then your mind's gone, okay, well, it's not that, so what else could it be? When in actual fact, they've come back now, however long later, and said, I'm really sorry, we made a mistake.
Imagine being the person who made that mistake and they didn't listen.
And then you're back to square one again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's a bigger job, isn't it? A much harder job to locate where the rubbish had gone. The landfill in question was at Milton near Cambridge. Beginning in 2017, Suffolk Police launched one of the most extensive landfill searches in British history. For 20 weeks, specialist teams in protective suits sifted through mountains of decomposing waste. The stench was overwhelming. The work was slow and dangerous. They recovered everything from animal carcasses to discarded appliances. The search covered over 6,500 tons of waste. And yet, not a single trace of Corrie. No clothing, nothing. This left investigators in an agonising position. If Corrie was in that bin, why wasn't he here? What a job to do.
I could not think of anything worse.
Think about when your own bin's being left there for 2 days running and it stinks, doesn't it?
It stinks.
Especially in heat and that.
And you get that weird little bin water at the bottom. Bin juice. It's absolutely disgusting.
Bin juice.
Do you not get bin juice?
No, not really.
If your bin has a little leakage...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know what horrendous. You mean, yeah.
But also, that also baffles me a little bit as well because, well, actually, we're only talking about, if it said the search started in early 2017, he went missing in August 2016. So what's that? Not even 6 months later? You'd think that they'd recover like a bone or something, wouldn't you? And also, for them to spend 20 weeks, that's 5 months, searching this landfill, they must have been, I know they can't be 100% sure, but there must have been a reason why they decided to spend so long doing that.
Police check Corrie's mobile phone data. At 3:25 a.m, his phone is in Bury St Edmunds. It stays there until after 4:30 a.m, when its signal begins to move. Not randomly, but along the exact same route taken by the bin lorry that morning. The signal travels from Bury St Edmunds to Barton Mills, the location of a waste transfer station. Then, somewhere along the route, it stops transmitting entirely. To police, this is no coincidence. The data suggests Corrie and his phone were inside that waste stream.
Well, I mean, that makes a lot more sense. And to me, that, I know, again, we can't be 100% sure, but come on. That really cements it, doesn't it?
What's the chances of, he's a young man with his phone. He's not separated from his phone, is he? Or I suppose you could go on the theory that...
He threw his phone in the bin?
That the phone was in the bin. It doesn't mean that he is, but the weight load was...
I didn't even think of that until you just said it, to
be
honest.
I know, it just occurred to me as well.
Yeah, but then you would have to have seen him come out then, somewhere.
If you look at it logically, like I said, you know, he doesn't come out.
They're both in that bin.
The bin load's heavier. The phone follows the same route as the bin. Do you know what I mean? But I can't understand why they never found anything, or even his phone. But I suppose his phone would be crushed. And imagine searching for something that small in a pile that big of whatever, how many tons it was.
Well, it said that the landfill was at a place called Milton.
Yeah.
And then it also
transfer
says,
centre.
Yeah, it arrived at a transfer centre called the Barton Mills. So I'm assuming they're not the same place. So maybe along the way, things have been mixed up or been dispersed out.
What is a transfer centre?
Couldn't tell you if I wanted to.
Can we look it up?
I assume maybe all of the lorries go to a certain point and then it's transferred to maybe a bigger one or something that takes it to the landfill.
But there was a reason why they were searching in the one they searched in. So
yeah,
because
I'm thinking that was, I'm assuming that would be a main point where all the bin lorries go to, or they go to a transfer point, put it in something else, and then that takes it to one central landfill.
Yeah,
point.
maybe it's emptied out of the actual bin lorry into a bigger thing. Or
yeah, because I don't think a bin lorry goes to a landfill. I think it has to be like a much bigger thing.
Where so they all just drop it off somewhere, and maybe it's kind of, yeah, it must be put into a different kind of transport system, must that?
I would assume so, and that maybe that's the reason why they've never found anything. I don't know. It's baffling, isn't it?
Yeah. As I say, you couldn't rule out, could you, that the phone was in the bin and he wasn't, but that would be some kind of...
It's not likely, is it?
You know, you could say, well, what if he decides to go and start another life, which is very unlikely, but what if he did and he threw the phone in to make it look like that? But then where did he go? You didn't see him on the camera, did you? So,
well, let's talk about some other theories.
While the bin lorry theory remains the official explanation, alternative theories persist. Number one, abduction. Could someone have coerced Corrie into a vehicle in the horseshoe? Police believe CCTV makes this unlikely, but it can't be fully ruled out.
It's not that.
But it can't be ruled out because I think the cameras were sweeping cameras, so...
I know, but you're not going to miss a whole vehicle.
Well, you actually can. So that's why it's not being fully ruled out, because there's a small chance that it could have been that, but...
I mean, stranger things have happened, I suppose.
But again, I mean, if somebody followed him into there, because they'd have to know he was in there, it would be on the CCTV, wouldn't it? Like, of him going in at least,
that's,
you know,
I mean,
with
a
car.
What are the chances that a car goes in and comes out completely undetected by CCTV?
Yeah. So they'd have to know he was in there, wouldn't they? And another one is voluntary disappearance. Some have speculated that Corrie chose to vanish, but his family says this is impossible. He left behind all personal possessions, his bank accounts untouched.
Yeah, I don't think it's that one either, to be honest. He doesn't seem like the type of guy that would want to just randomly vanish.
No, I think he was, you know, he liked his job and he was having a good time going out, wasn't he? And, you know, he parked his car in the normal spot. He could have drove somewhere miles away. I don't know why, you know, it seems a bit convoluted, doesn't it? If he wanted to disappear. The final one is undetected exit. Could there have been a blind spot in the CCTV coverage? Investigators insist they accounted for every angle. But I remember reading at the time, it was said that there were cameras that did... You know, it's the timing of it, the way you can sometimes just miss something.
I know, but the chance of every camera in that area missing it is so highly unlikely, in my opinion. I'm not a CCTV expert, but something must have caught something, you know what I mean?
So you have to look at the weight of the evidence, don't you, for which theory you think is most likely. And it's definitely the bin lorry, isn't it?
That just seems like the most straightforward explanation, to be honest, even though it's a really random scenario. It seems like the most straightforward, especially with his phone tracking the exact route of the bin lorry and stuff. It kind of, yeah, it could have just been his phone, but then where's he?
It's very sad and unfortunate, isn't it? He was really unlucky, wasn't he, that he just happened to wander in there when he was drunk and probably did climb into a bin. I mean, you know, he might have been cold, you know, and he's tired and maybe just got inside for whatever reason. People do weird stuff when they're drunk, don't they?
They do, yeah, definitely. And it's going to annoy me now because I need to know why he got in the bin or if he did ever get in the bin.
I don't think we're ever going to know that, are we? In 2018, Suffolk Police closed the case, concluding that the most probable scenario was that Corrie died in the waste system and his remains were unrecoverable. But for Nicola Urquhart, that conclusion is not an answer. It's a theory without proof. She continues to advocate for further investigation, certain that someone somewhere knows more than they've said. Corrie's disappearance is a reminder of how, even in our age of constant surveillance, a person can simply vanish. One minute they're under the harsh glow of a street lamp, the next they're gone, leaving behind only questions. I think as a mother, any chance of him being alive or, you know, she's going to cling on to that, really.
I was going to say, she's never going to let it go, is she? Because there's no definitive proof that that's 100% what happened.
And if there's a 1% chance or a 0.5% chance, she's going to look for it. And I think she just wants answers. I don't think it's the fact that she thinks he's going to come back. I think she just wants to know what happened.
I think also her being a police officer, she's probably pushing as much as she can, you know, using the weight of her job a little bit.
And I think that conclusion of how he died is so horrific that she probably doesn't even really want to believe that.
I was just going
to
say,
any other outcome might have been a better outcome.
And it's so bizarre and random.
But that's these random occurrences happen, don't they?
They do, definitely. And I think, like you said, she's looking for every reason to not accept that that's what happened because it's just so unbelievable.
Have you read the story of, true story of the Nutty Pussy Cave?
I don't even know what you've just said.
Well, you know, like when people go cave exploring underground, and there was like a young man, I think he was about 30, something like that, and him and his brother went, they did it a lot of the time. There was this one cave, and it was notorious, and he went down into the cave, and it was really narrow at one point, and he went, unfortunately, down head first.
And got stuck.
And got wedged, and they could never get him out, and he died there like that with everyone trying to help him, and they just sealed the cave up.
Do you know what's really strange?
There's a film about
that
it, actually.
That popped up on my Instagram the other day.
Really?
Yeah, and it said...
So sad.
They realised that it was more dangerous to try and extract him than it was to just let him die.
You just couldn't get him out.
They said it wasn't worth... I think I read something about... If they would have removed him, it would have broke his spine, broke his neck, paralysed him, and probably left him brain dead.
So you know what happened?
So they thought it was more humane to let him die with them talking
thing.
To him the whole time.
Yeah.
Not peacefully, but you know what I mean.
Because when he went through this narrow passage, he breathed in and went through it, and then he expanded, and he just couldn't get out.
There's absolutely no chance
that's what it was.
On this
and
planet.
He was head down, and that's what one of the main issues was that because he was head down, it put, I don't know what it is, but unnecessary strain on his organs and everything else. Do you know what I mean? Because you can't stay upside down for that length of time.
No chance. I do not.
Isn't that horrible?
Mess with the small spaces like that.
It was like you went in and went round it.
But also the thing is, like, if you can't fit through it, don't fucking go through it.
I know, but
like, why are you trying to breathe in to fit through? Like, no, just no. Your body's not meant to be doing stuff like that. Just stay out of the cave. What could possibly be so interesting inside some rocks?
I know. I think it was kind of like a bottleneck type of situation. No, do you know what I mean?
No.
Isn't that scary?
I mean, it's really sad, but no. You're not catching me in a cave.
There's a film about it, if you look it up. And I started watching it, and I couldn't watch it. I was too upset. It's just horrible. I just couldn't watch it.
Well, that was a strong left turn. But anyway, still really sad about
that.
Corey McKeague.
I'm saying about random things, the way something can just happen, you know, that you didn't expect.
Well, that one hasn't left me as annoyed as I normally am, because I'm pretty certain we know what happened.
Yeah, but you can't be certain, can
No,
you?
I know I can't be certain, but like in my mind, I'm certain.
That is what's
certain.
Annoying about it, because... You, as you say, you can't definitively say that is what happened because there's no visual evidence of it. But, you know, as I say, it's like when they try a crime, isn't it? It's the weight of the evidence outweighs the, you know, the possibility of it not happening. So for me, that is what happened.
Right, everyone, that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you again next time.
And remember... If you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.